Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Great Scott! I got a bad feeling about this.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
We're fine. We're fine. We're fine.
This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Han Solo. I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
Can't wait.
This is the Bart and Han Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It's 1 o'clock in the greatest city in the world. Alan Han, Bart Scott. The number, 800-919-3776. Of course, you can get us on social media at Bart and Han on Twitter, Instagram, IG Live, 1230.
We'll do it live.
Every day, and today we realize that it's such a Monday. It's such a Monday that Bart's phone's broken. And it's not only is it broken in the worst place possible to be broken, right over the camera. So, Bart, I can't tell if the camera's broken or you've just been hanging out with Snoop Dogg. A little 420 going on.
Little Wiz Khalifa. Black and yellow, black and yellow.
I mean, it's you're looking a little smoky today, man.
Yeah, man.
Now, look around IG, you used your iPad, so you had a nice clear picture.
It's a CMOS.
But, yeah, maybe it is the CMOS. Who knows?
Where did they get that drop from? I don't remember that ever being part. You hold it out on me, Anthony. You can't be hitting me with new drops of myself. I didn't even know you always got record on, man. It was a hell of a weekend.
What happened?
Man.
What happened?
I don't know, man. You know how you get in this the little corner crack, and it just for some reason.
But how did it? Well, you had to have dropped it.
Yeah, I dropped it. I always do that, man. What happens is sometimes I forget. When I'm in my car, I have my speaker on. I'm sitting there, and I sit on my lap, and you get out the car, and the phone just flops off your lap and falls on the damn asphalt. Yep. And then what happens is, it's always like you drop it like 10 times, and ooh, oh, no crack. And then it's a time where you drop it, and it drops flat or something, and it has that little fault line, man. And the fault line went right over the camera, and I had a cameo today, and I couldn't even do the cameo. The cameo, I had to face the other way. Push it, come back. So you see me getting all in the screen. Production value is horrible. Whoever gets my cameo going to probably want a refund. You know what I'm saying? Because they say, I ain't supposed to see you set up the camera, push the camera, sit down, get up, walk around.
Can't edit?
I don't know.
You couldn't edit that?
I got no technical life. I don't know how to do that. So it's like, all
you have
good.
Kids,
though, man.
They know how to do it.
Yeah, yeah. They were charged.
I hear you. It's a mess.
Yeah, they were trying. It was a hell of a weekend, though, man. I mean, jeez.
How was your Father's Day before we get into the madness of
sports? It was solid. It was solid. It felt like Fat Tuesday again because they know I love pineapple upside down cake.
Oh.
So they made me a pineapple upside down cake. And what I like is I got the kids at that age where they make you the homemade stuff.
Yeah.
And it's cool. It's still cool because you see the artistic expression and all that stuff. And then, you know, when you get older, you just get the socks. But I'm before the socks. I'm with the handmade stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, that means
how
it
was
came
yours?
From heart.
How was yours? Time.
Mine was fantastic. It was what a beautiful day. And my wife literally, like, we went out on the deck and she goes, "You're sitting in this chair. You're not getting up. For the rest of the day, you're just going to sit here. You're doing nothing." Because I'm not good at relaxing. Like, I'm really bad at it.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't sit still. Like, I'm not that person that, like, you'll ever see, like, on a boat that's not moving.
Right.
Like, I can't do that stuff. There's something wrong with me. Like, I can't sit for more than a couple of minutes, and I got to get up and do something. So,
and it's one of those things when you're a father, you feel like you should be working on Father's Day to kind of earn it. So I kind of, all day I cleaned up a couple rooms. I did some of the honey-do list stuff so I can just reinforce that I am a good dad. Because
I had to work the grill, at least the grill, right? Like, give me the grill. I made guac, my specialty. So
nice.
Good.
Guac.
So,
what's in your guac?
Oh, no, I keep it simple, man.
It's cilantro?
Yes, of course. Cilantro, tomato, a little bit of white onion, occasionally jalapeno. I'll chop up one little, like, tiny
jalapeno,
little slice just to give it a little bite. But for the most part, no. It's always about the avocados.
Nice,
always about the avocados.
You
know how ripe are they?
See, I'm horrible with that stuff, man, because I can't pick a good avocado when I go to the grocery store because I didn't grow up with making, like, you know, guac or mm-hmm. anything like that. It's an acquired taste because the whole craze of avocado, you can put avocado or toast, especially, right, all the healthy fats and all that mm-hmm. stuff.
Yep.
So now I'm like, okay, but how do I always get it? It's too hard.
All right. If it feels like, bottom line is this, if it feels like you could throw it and it would hurt someone.
Yeah.
It's not ready.
But how do I
put it in a brown paper bag and put it in a dark place?
See, that's what I'm messing up at. So I don't know how to ripe it. You know, you get bananas, you get them green, and you wait for them to ripen. It's good because you know how many days they are away.
Put them in darkness. Yeah, like a day. And put them in darkness. Now, the other thing is
like
if
mushroom.
You grab it and you can feel like your finger can go right through the skin, not good. Then you get rid of it.
Okay, that's too bad.
So it's sort of in between. I wish I could tell you what it should feel like, but I can't on the air. Just put it this way. There's a certain thing that...
Like apple pie?
Phrasing?
There's a certain thing that it feels like you're like, yeah, that's nice.
What was that? It was American Pie, right?
Yeah, but I don't mean... It has nothing to do with that.
Okay, I thought it was
never mind.
Apple pie.
I'll tell you all fair. That's how I do it. But as you can tell from the drops from Anthony, it's time to get into the news.
Absolutely.
And it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. This was, to me, one of those moments where you heard it and you thought to yourself, I'm not surprised that hate exists. I can't believe people are this stupid. It really is amazing, Bart. What happened? So NASCAR's race was supposed to be at Talladega yesterday. It was rained out. It's going to run today at 3:00 instead. And what we heard instead after the ESPYs last night, we opened Scott Van Pelt Sports Center last night with, instead of the celebration of ESPYs and looking back on the awards and everything else that was going on, instead there was incredible news out of Talladega where they didn't even race. First and foremost, you thought maybe the worst headline is some moron took a crop duster, put a Confederate flag on the back of it, and flew it over the track.
Right.
Congratulations, you were today's first idiot. But you didn't win the championship of idiots because later on, NASCAR confirmed that there was a noose found in the garage of the 43 car, which is Bubba Wallace, who is the only black driver on the circuit. And you know what that means, and you know what that's about. Now, there's limited access, Bar, to the garage area, to the track. They were barely, they were just bringing fans into the building for the first time. So there's only a small amount of people that this could be. And NASCAR quickly put out a statement, making sure, letting everybody know that number one, that this is not what they represent. Number two, they will find who did this. And that person will be banned from the sport, whoever it is. But, Bart, I don't even know where to begin. So let me begin by the emotion from Marty Smith on ESPN, because this was something and it was live. And Marty actually dropped a curse word in there because it showed. And he's one of the kindest, nicest people you'll ever meet. And you could hear the frustration in his voice as he was describing something that he heard about, saw, and had to report. And like I said, it was, to me, very compelling and yet also very frustrating. Take a listen.
I was really thrilled that all of the fans who made their way into the racetrack today did so without any Confederate flag memorabilia or clothing or anything stashed, anything like that. They came to see the sport we all love so much. And then someone who had access to the garage area does this. I'm just so frustrated by it.
Now, like I said, to hear him drop that word, yeah, knowing he's on live TV for Marty, just shows you how, I don't want to say unhinged, but he certainly was emotional.
Yeah.
And for him also, and I'm going to say, and I promise, and I'll step away from this because I know you have a lot to say. But the frustration is also, number one, NASCAR has, we've talked about this, really taken a surprise, I would say surprising lead in a culture change for a sport that everybody just accepted, almost joked. Oh, it's just, everybody's racist there. They're all racist, right? Like, I mean, they just joked about it. Like, it was just a given. And they said, no, we're not about this. And they have done so much to support Bubba and the movement that you felt like, wow, they really turned the corner. I mean, banning the Confederate flag, all that stuff. This happens, and as Marty said, it makes you feel like all the good deeds and the good effort wiped away, because the feeling is, and I wonder how you feel, that you go, you know what? Yeah, on the surface they tried, but they're never going to be able to clean that culture of what I guess has been something in it from the very beginning, which is, of course, racism that is hidden and yet also very much right out there in your face.
Yeah, but see, this is nothing new to African Americans. We've always understood that there are going to be disappointments on the road to progress. NASCAR has held themselves up as a beacon, a surprising ally, a beacon of light, of equality, empathy, and understanding that they're really catering to an audience of one. When you think about Bubba Watson, it's the only African-American driver in the circuit. But it gives us courage to understand, because we knew that it's always going to be some people that are resistant to change. And it was going on well. And African-Americans are used to this. But it started with the guy with the crop duster.
Hate that you're saying that.
And
nobody should be used to this.
But it starts with the guy with the crop duster. Whenever you're trying to change something, it doesn't matter. Whenever you're trying to change something, it's going to be people that's going to like the way it was, right? Because that's all they know, right? So they like the way it was. They like the environment. But for us, it's inspiring, not the fact that it happened. What's inspiring to African Americans is how NASCAR swiftly addressed it. Because it's always going, you can't apologize for every idiot. And what we always say, that whatever you have in society, you're going to have in the industry. It doesn't matter, right? If you go to lawyers, you're going to have racist lawyers. You go to doctors, you're going to have racist doctors. You go to the NFL, sports, any sport, you're going to have racist people within it, because athletes or sports are made up of members of society. Every society, you have some of everything. But man, did NASCAR step up. Man, did NASCAR move swiftly. Man, was NASCAR words encouraging and powerful, impactful. And the fact that Richard Petty came out and said, hey, this is my car. And if you love me and you hate him, then I hate you. Because I'm not with that type of life. That's why I gave the young man the opportunity, because he's earned the right to be here. And that's all that should matter. And so, like, if you're a fan of mine, you can go ahead. I don't need fans like you. I don't want fans like you. Hate against me. NASCAR today, to me, is bigger than it's ever been. Guess what I'm doing at 3 o'clock? I don't care whether I'm here or not. I'm TiVoing that race. I'm watching that race. I'm going to make sure that my television is counted to stand up and let them know that we are going to be behind this sport, because they stepped out and they supported us when they didn't have to. We thought it was going to be baseball. We thought it was going to be basketball. Football, of course. No. NASCAR has come out and they've been able. Listen, we always say as athletes, you get your greatest growth from your biggest failures, right? So the biggest, you know, like you can continue to work on what you're good at, or if you work at what you're not good at, now you can go further. So I look at this like basketball, how much farther can they go as far as their audience? I feel like NASCAR, we're tapping into a different audience. So how we talk about NASCAR is going to create bigger waves. Like those kids that grew up in that environment that raised that Confederate flag. They didn't know what they were raising it for. They raised it because their daddy raised it. They raised it because they were taught that it was about Southern pride. But guess what? Now they're not going to see those flags. Now if they continue to watch NASCAR with their parents, they're going to understand that Black Lives Matter. Now they're going to understand, daddy, this flag, why isn't this flag there anymore? This flag isn't there because it was about traitors. It was about people that didn't want to, that defied the government, that defied the president, that said that all men are created equal. So they fought against, they were traitors. So that was a symbol of traitors, no different than a Nazi sign. The same way African Americans look at that sign is the same way the Jewish people look at the swastika. See, but people don't want to put that correlation, but it is, because it's about terror. It's about trying to suppress somebody. It's about saying that you're greater than somebody. So we are all for that. And I love the fact that NASCAR has been swift. And guess what, man? Just like you saw Alvin Kamara sitting in there at the last race, you're going to see African-American support. We're going to put our dollars behind this sport. This sport is going to flourish. This sport is going to move up in the television rankings. Because the people that, listen, what else are the people that they're going to turn it off? They'll turn it off for a second. But guess what? For every white viewer you lose, you're going to gain five black ones. So thank you, idiots. Because not only did you just remind everybody just what African Americans deal with, you took a symbol that was about killing, hanging, terrorizing a community. And we will not be deterred. We will not be afraid. We will not be afraid. It is no way we're going back to how it used to be. We're going to march. We're going to stand for something. We're going to fight this. And you have everybody. You know you can't sit on the sidelines. You're either with it or you're not. Complicit. You can't be complicit. You're either with it or you're not. And you got to make it known. And listen, at the end of the day, I know with conviction in my heart, and everybody that's on this side knows that they're on the right side of history. That's why the world is stepping up. Because they understand we've stood by too long, and it's not really going to change, right? Because you go all the way back to my grandparents, right? Emmett Till. You move up to that. Martin Luther King. You move up to when I was a young kid. Rodney King. Now you move up to George Floyd. If we continue to be passive aggressive and not be all in, when my kids get older, it'll be somebody else. So enough is enough. I think it's too many generations now, because my grandmother's still alive. My mother's still alive. My sisters, and then my kids. You got four generations of people saying, nah, we done. We done asking. We're done asking for permission to be treated equally. But thank God for the white, the Asian, everybody that's in support. Because everybody can understand that racism is wrong. And if we truly want to be that dream, we want to be that experiment of what America's supposed to be, it's going to take all its members to stand up and call out racism. Simple as that. So NASCAR, I don't know if I got to go get me a Lowe's, a Home Depot jacket. Bring the race jackets back, because black people don't mind being a part of it, but you got to have some cool gear. And some of the stuff is Wacky D, so we got to go get Magic Don, not Don Juan, Dapper Dan, to create a Gucci version of some of these NASCAR symbols, man, so we can swag it out. Because if it ain't swaggy, we going to have to try and fix some stuff.
Well, that's the thing. You just get yourself involved then and make it swaggy. But Richard Petty, who I was the legendary 43 car, which now Bubba Wallace drives. Richard Petty, so Marty Smith just tweeted earlier that Richard Petty will be at the race today at Talladega. So he's going to be present for this, and he's going to stand with Bubba Wallace. Mm. He hasn't been to a race since the COVID-19 pandemic began and everything came to a stop, and he's 82 years old, so you can understand why he doesn't feel comfortable being in that kind of a setting. Man. But he's coming out and saying, I'm standing next to my driver. And Marty Smith had a quote from Petty that said, the most important thing for me right now is hugging my driver. And he also put out a statement as well, as you mentioned, letting those fans that have known him. I mean, he's a legend. I mean, that's the king.
Yeah.
Richard Petty. And he said this in a statement. I'm enraged by the act of someone placing a noose in the garage stall of my race team. There is absolutely no place in our sport or our society for racism. This filthy act serves as a reminder of how far we still have to go to eradicate racial prejudice. And it galvanizes my resolve to use the resources of Richard Petty Motorsports to create change. I mean, that's a pretty serious statement there. And I think we all can feel the same way. All you're doing is emboldening those of us who feel like enough is enough. So he adds, the sick person who perpetrated this act must be found, exposed, and swiftly and immediately expelled from NASCAR. I believe in my heart this despicable act is not representative of the competitors I see each day in the NASCAR garage area. I stand shoulder to shoulder with Bubba yesterday, today, tomorrow, and every day forward. Now, Marty Smith was on Get Up this morning as well. And Marty has put in a lot of time, obviously. And he explained the steps that NASCAR has to take to find out who did this.
The noose in Bubba's garage stall was actually seen by a member of his team. Darrell Bubba never saw it. He never saw it personally. And when that team member saw it, he alerted NASCAR. And NASCAR immediately had a meeting of its senior executive staff, including President Steve Phelps, Executive Vice President Steve O'Donnell, and others. And they made the decision that they were going to figure out who this person is. They were going to remove this person from the sport as quickly and rapidly as possible, as swiftly as possible. And it's a brand new garage area that we're talking about. And so there's cameras. It should be a situation where they can look at those surveillance cameras in the garage area, determine who that person was, and remove them from the sport quickly.
And that name will get out. But, I mean, if there's cameras, you're going to be found, which is why I say idiot. I mean, how stupid can you be? Just stupid to think that you could do this, of course, anonymously, because there's so much courage in doing something like that where no one really is supposed to see. You think no one sees you doing it, right? You think you're going to intimidate someone. Yeah. So there's no courage there. But on top of it, you're so dumb that you don't even realize there's security cameras everywhere. So now we'll see if security cameras caught something, who they caught, and who it is that's behind it. Marty said he doesn't think that it's a fan. Now, LeBron also tweeted support for Bubba Wallace, saying that, no, you don't stand alone. I'm right here with you as well as every other athlete. Just want to continue to say how proud I am of you for continuing to take a stand for change here in America and sports. NASCAR, I salute you as well. And, Bart, as you mentioned, you know, not that we want to start, you know, throwing kudos all over the place here, but it is important that NASCAR has maintained the aggressive stand that they have taken. Yeah.
Started
against
with
this stuff
too. This ain't like something new that they just jumped on a movement. It was a change coming far before this. You know, this is just the biggest step that we've noticed because of, you know, George Floyd and Bubba Watson. But remember, Dale Earnhardt was talking about this, you know, a couple of years before. So we can't just say, oh, they're trying to jump on what's popular. They're trying to grab a fan base. No, they were trying to do what's right, just simply because it's right. When you know that your cause is just, it's easy for you to have conviction. And his cause is just. And listen, it's hard for Bubba because no matter what, when he gets in a car, he doesn't see other drivers like him. So it's different, you know, because when I'm in football, if I take a knee, I can see other African-Americans taking a knee with me. If you look at, you know, basketball, he's by himself. He's looking around. So, I mean, it takes a little bit more courage. So, I mean, listen, we might all need to have to pull up in the Pacer, man, and just show him there so he can see some support from us with our Bubba Watson shirts on. Like, right. Bubba, we need you to win the damn race, man.
Well, that's the other thing. We talk about it. If there is any magic in sports today, it would be that Bubba wins. I mean, it really, you know, that's the magical kind of ending, the Disney ending, of course, that you'd love to see is to see him either win today or at least win at some point, you know, this year. It would be amazing. Now, NASCAR President Steve Phelps is expected to address the media in just a few minutes. So if there's anything said there, anything revealed there, we'll certainly bring it to you. We wanted to get Brad Daugherty on the show. Brad Daugherty, former NBA player, but also, a lot of people know, also does commentary for ESPN for NASCAR. And he's been very much involved in NASCAR for a long time. He's also, by the way, an owner. So not only is there a black driver, there's a black owner in NASCAR. Mm-hmm. And as JTG Daugherty Racing, he's got a couple of drivers as well on the Cup Series. He was unable, obviously, to join us today because of the race, but we did reach out to him anyway. He did send us a statement, however, and it said, in part, the event that happened Sunday at Talladega Super Speedway is disappointing, but we're encouraged by the positive response to the negative action. We firmly stand with the strong leadership position NASCAR and our partners have taken. We celebrate their mission and their goal of eliminating inequality and intolerance. This includes furthering our education using tools. Now, he points out to a pg.com/takeonrace, which is one of their sponsors that has a Take On Race initiative. He also said, we stand behind everyone who is supportive of inclusiveness and are moving forward to encourage positive change. So Brad Daugherty did at least reach out to us with that statement. We just want to confirm that Bart is very much aware that it is Bubba Wallace.
Yeah, I do.
Bubba Watson is a golfer. But anybody that listens to our show knows that Bart also gets my last name wrong sometimes.
Han.
It's just what happens.
What's a teammate? Brian Thomas. I always mess up. You know, your Tink Tink.
It's almost like the time who was it, John Olerud? Somebody looked at Ricky Henderson in the club. I love this story. And it was like he doesn't know any of his teammates' names. And it's like, here, watch. Hey, Ricky, what's my name? And Ricky Henderson looks up and he goes, I don't need to tell you. You know what your name is.
I always give everybody a nickname anyway.
Yeah. So anyways, just want to make sure that anybody that's concerned
apologies, Bubba. Messed up. But it's all good.
Your heart's in the right place, and that's certainly what matters here. Again, 800-919-3777. Let's grab some calls here on the topic, beginning with Greg in New Jersey. Greg.
Hey, guys. How you doing? You guys are doing a great job, by the way. Two things very fast. The first thing quickly is the driver that was threatened, Bubba, are they looking at this as a real threat to possibly him and his family, and are they taking measures to protect him and his family? Because that is no joke of what they laid out. And the other thing is NASCAR right now has the opportunity to double its fan base with this. Can you imagine if they get a guy like Russell Simmons or Magic Johnson to put a little bit of money in, sponsor a cool car like the NBA car with LeBron's logo, KD, or the Magic Mobile?
Well, that's the guy to watch
like
to
that.
Me. Greg, the guy to watch to me, and thanks for the call, would be LeBron.
Yeah.
And whether or not he and, you know, his company that he's got, it's a production company, but he does a lot of other stuff there too. I jokingly call it LeBron Incorporated.
Yeah, a lot
but
of
but like that. If he decides, you know, let me get involved in this sport, because there is money to be made there. There's a ton of sponsorships, there's a lot of visibility, there's money to be made,
you think, and also his branding for his existing company.
That's right,
you think he can put his series on there, he can put the school, he can have Nike put money on there. But also a guy to watch out with maybe partnering and co-owning is Jordan. Could you imagine if LeBron and Jordan came together? Because remember, Jordan used to have a motorcycle racing team for Ducati, you know what I mean? Jordan loves like bikes, so just imagine if they kind of come together. Could you imagine all this time we talk about them comparing them to each other and they come together? A guy like Magic Johnson as well. Guy like Jay-Z. Like, I think this opens the door. How about a guy like Lewis Hamilton that makes people sleep on how much money this man makes, you know, for his racing with Mercedes. And he just said that he started an equality council, you know, for, you know, out there. He's in Europe, right? I believe he's in Europe. But, you know,
that would be Formula One, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's a rock star amongst, like, all the you know, all the athletes, you know what I mean? And the story that they did on his brother, how he really couldn't because he was disabled, but he learned how to ride, you know, and drive on the simulators. I mean, it's the possibility's open, but now you have our attention. Much like, you know, when you think about what Serena and Venus did for tennis and attracting young black or women of color to the sport. You look at what Tiger did for golf, like getting our eyes on the sport. It's not a coincidence that, you know, the ratings are up so high, because where do you think the boost comes from? It came from a market of viewers that weren't there before.
Well, you
and
have
they
a
felt like
you,
they were excluded.
You have an athlete or a star that transcends really the audience, and that's what Tiger became. And you saw there was early on with Tiger, there was pushback there too.
Yep.
There were guys who made jokes and all that stuff that they thought, oh,
yeah, the collard greens and all that
stuff.
Yeah,
that stuff was happening, and it's obviously quickly gone away. Jared in Williamsburg, Jared.
Yeah. How y'all doing? Thanks for taking my call. Hope everybody's fine. Alan, this is more so for you, because I don't want you to not like what Bart said about being us as African Americans and blacks being surprised when this happens, because we are not surprised when.
I hate that he said that, I mean, I hate that that's a reality. It disturbs me. I didn't say I hate it that he's saying it, that he's wrong. It disturbs me. Because that's, once again, something I can't relate to, that you could just be so casual of, I expected this. And for me to just be like, I can't wrap my head around it.
Because I am black, and this started happening since Rodney King. And that's when I first saw the police beat the black onto Rodney King. And then after that, Amadou Diallo, Sean Bell, and all these people, it continues to happen. So it's not surprising. But what is surprising is that the swift reaction, like Bart said. How they are handled.
How does that make you feel, Jared? How does it make you feel, Jared, the way NASCAR put out a statement immediately? Richard Petty and his statement, Dale Jr. and his statement. How does it make you feel when you see that?
That's the part that surprises us, because now we know that we have that backing, and now we know that we have that support that we didn't have before, or that people were afraid to give us before.
Right. For me, it would have made me feel like we weren't alone. Because we know we can't change it by ourselves, because no matter what, we're always going to see the difference between, you know, the oppressor and the oppressed. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's the easiest thing. And the reason why some other races come over here, because blacks aren't the first people to have to deal with racism. I mean, we think about the people that were darker skinned coming from Italy. We think about the Irish at first when they came over, they were seen as lesser. You know, it's that I can't change the color of my skin. I can't blend in. It's obvious that I'm different. You know, and the fact that we can say, hey, now we don't feel like we're alone, it gives us power to be able to say, you know what? I understand that everybody's not like that. You know what I mean? Because I can just judge, because you don't want to get caught on the other side, because you can be radicalized on the other side too, man. Because I can remember when I was in school, I went to a black studies class. I had an African-American studies class as part of my, my requirements. And it was making me racist, man. It was making me like so hyper aware of anything that anybody that wasn't black said. I had to drop the class, man, because I was looking at my teammates differently. I was like, listen, this is radicalizing me, because it's like it's making me look at people that everything I'm analyzing everything that people say to me and how they react to me. And it's not just understanding that they just my teammates is giving me a hard time, because that's what teammates do. You know, and I think sometimes it happens on the other side as well. You know what I mean? So the fact that, you know,
you're right,
we feel like we're not alone, and that we can just judge people on the basis. It's like kind of, and I know it's corny, man, but it's going back to the whole Martin Luther King, you know, judge by the content of your character, not the color of your skin.
Of course.
But that goes both ways, you know, because we have stereotypes as well, because we're so guarded, because we've been hurt so many times. It's like black people have a lot of scar tissue.
Yeah,
right? Because every time we think that, okay, this is different, we get shown that we're not equal. And that's why I think that's what it was, because we assumed before Trump got in office and Barack Obama was in office, and whether you want to say he did a good job or bad job, what it did for black people is it made people say that, hey, he deserved to be here, and people elected him because of he was qualified. Had nothing to do with the color of his skin, right? Whether you agree with his politics or not, you know what I mean? It was fair. That's why I think people wanted to see the first woman president as well, because I feel like women and gender equality is just as oppressive as, you know, the color, you know, the racism and stuff like that. So, I mean, I don't know, and I know I'm rambling, but I just feel encouraged by the fact that Bubba Wallace doesn't have to feel like he's alone.
That's important, and that's why having people around him instead of him standing by himself is critical. And today's race is certainly something they're already there's something they added to the infield at Talladega that said "Stand with Bubba." You know, they've added that for today. Now, it wasn't there yesterday. They just said, no, we're doing this. So NASCAR is really going all in. What are you laughing at?
You want to piss racist people off? You want to piss them off? You go get Jill Scott and let her sing the black national anthem. Oh, they'll lose their damn mind. Oh, lift every voice. No! It'd be like when Dave Chappelle was a great, the white supremacist. And like, y'all want to see my face? Y'all want to see my face?
Oh,
and he took
God.
His hand off. He's like, yeah, black.
The guy's
and their hands start blowing. Let him bring Jill Scott in there.
Oh, my God.
And set up a Bojangles chicken, like on a grill on the outside. Oh, that'd be so damn mad.
Oh, my goodness. All right, let's hey, Doug Mills is from Long Island. Hey, Doug.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good to have a time to call in with the COVID just returning. Obviously, you're not returning, hopefully, but just slowing down. But I just wanted to say, hey, Bart, man, first of all, I had Chuck D on with me listening to you, and he said, okay, that brother was a scholar athlete. You were doing the Fannie Lou Hamer sick and tired of being sick and tired in your earlier diatribe, but that was good, man. We really like that. And then just a few quick points. You know, first of all, Alan Steve said hello, and he said you're a great guy. And secondly, I people knock Mr. Dolan often, you know, for whatever reason. I mean, maybe your cable bill's too high, maybe they haven't won enough, and you know, I don't know what it is, but he did put together that council, which Alan Houston was a part of, and you said they didn't do enough publicizing of it. And
that
you know,
the point. Don't you think that was the point? The whole point was judging by my action, right, not by what I say.
Right. And you have to think about it. That regardless of what happened, and for me, not just because Steve's my brother, I think that you get a pocket of 2 or 3 years at the Knicks, and that, according to 3 other GMs I know and 2 coaches, is always going to be their problem because they're not going to sit like Philly did and do a process, trust the process. But what I'm saying is that man, and this is record, and this is historic, he was the first owner to hire a team of African Americans to run the front office. Any sport, any league, he was the first one. So when you knock him, remember that. And then lastly, I just want to say, well, kind of twofold. Melissa Hargrove LeBron is the first female African American NASCAR owner. If you guys ever want to get her on, she's a dear friend. I would have no problem having her call up. And, you know, she knows both Steve and I. And then lastly, I can remember as a kid, and it's like it was yesterday, corner of Forest Avenue and Babylon Turnpike in Roosevelt. I remember being 9 or 10, I don't know my age, on a bike. I see Dr. J and John Mackey on the corner talking, and, you know, they're both were like uncles to me. And I can remember a cop pulling up and asking them, what the hell are you guys doing out here? And I said to the officer, that's Dr. J.
Yeah.
And then he just pulled off.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I've seen stuff. I have seen this. My Uncle Charlie was the first African-American to be get a request to try out for the Yankees. And he told me that, you know, the stuff that he told me, you know, for me growing up, you know, decades later, was just unbelievable. Just like when I tell my kid who's just a teenager, the stuff that I've seen with Rosedale, Queens, and being at a private school and being pulled over by police as a teenager and guns pulled out. I mean, Steve and I both had it.
But it didn't jade us.
It just made us say, you know, that's the way we have a lot of scar tissue, man.
I think, and thanks, Doug. And what Bart said, when Bart said that, I think that's probably, that might be the best way to put it, you know, is that. And if you want to try to understand when people say, you know, try to react to how black people react to things, you know, you get that a lot too, where it's like everything's a problem. Well, yeah, there's a lot of scar tissue there. There's a lot going on there. And the other thing, by the way, Bart, I love this too, when you hear from somebody white and they're just like, well, I don't see color. Like, of course, what do you mean you don't?
Right.
You better. Like, of course you see. It's not like you shouldn't see.
Right.
You shouldn't. You have to see the differences. The idea is to embrace that stuff, celebrate it, and also don't forget how similar we are despite those visual differences.
Right.
Like, is it that freaking hard? Like, that's the part I lose it with that.
We want money. We want a fine wife.
We all want the same thing. Yeah, exactly. How much of that stuff do we relate to? Marty Smith with a tweet just now is, again, NASCAR President Steve Phelps is talking to the media. He said this. He said, the investigation is ongoing, but we don't have a lot of answers at this point. He does say FBI on site now at Talladega doing investigation. So,
was DNA on that noose? There's something left behind. You know what I mean?
That's why FBI is there. This is getting serious, man. The Department of Justice involved. They're taking it serious. They don't have anything to announce yet, but it's certainly something that is ongoing. We'll keep an eye on it. Just to update some more now on the media availability by Steve Phelps, who's president of NASCAR. This all through Marty Smith, our reporter there. He, as we mentioned earlier, so FBI now is involved on site at Talladega right now to look into the noose that was found in the garage of Bubba Wallace. Now, again, the race was rained out yesterday. It will restart today at 3 o'clock. More from Marty. He said that Phelps said there's a very small number. Actually, let me start here. Won't get into specifics about numbers of cameras in the garage area or what's on them. So they're not revealing a lot of information right now, but says that that's part of what the FBI is looking at. It might be too early to get into specifics on what was captured. A very small number of people are in the footprint to access that portion of the garage. Can't say for certain that there wasn't a security breach, but the security in that area is very tight. So more than likely someone with a credential. He said the director of FBI has told the Birmingham office to use every resource available to find out who was involved with the noose in the garage. Also, in regards to any consideration or speculation that the noose was a staged event respond from Phelps is this, and those people that are bringing up, you know, Smollett and others, Phelps said, quote, that offends me. And then last but not least, if and when the person is found, Phelps said the person will unequivocally be banned from the sport for life. And there is increased security at Talladega for the race today. And now on the infield, hashtag I stand with Bubba. So that's where we are right now with that, the very latest on it. And
strong. Yeah.
You want what you want is right that you want to know, number one, that you're getting that much effort to find this person. But as you said, you also how important is it that a sport like this with its I guess you want to say its reputation, right? Yeah. What is the stereotype of NASCAR? This goes almost
boys.
Against what you would expect mm-hmm. their response to be.
And the next step that you take is some crazy radicalized fan that wants to start some type of race war. So now you worry about just making sure that the perimeters are safe. You know, I know they say his car was inspected. You want to make sure that everything is okay as far as his safety, because you would not want a tragedy. You know, what's going on. I mean, and like I said, black people's been here before. We remember Jackie Robinson. They tell him if he take the field, all those type of things. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I think, you know, I forget the teammate of Jackie Robinson that went out
in
Kentucky, Pee Wee Reese, right?
Put his arm around him.
Right. It's like, hey, you know, my family saw that. You know what I mean? Because he was speaking to his family. And I think Richard Petty coming out there and putting his arm around, you know, Bubba is symbolic. It's powerful. I mean, it's an image that's going to be replayed over and over again to be used, you know, to understand what acceptance is all about. You know, so I think it's a good thing. Like I said, we black folks understand that, you know, progress takes a long time, and we're more patient than people think because we've had to be. But we understand that this movement is moving a little bit different than the other ones that that we thought had hope. And that's because the participation by so many people of authority, so many people of power, so many people of influence.
So before we get to Jamal Adams, another story here, a headline locally for the New York Mets, if you're a Mets fan. So you know A-Rod, J-Lo, still trying to put together something, a group to buy the Mets. Add Mike Rapoli to the list of people, and he's got some real money. He's also a New York native, and he's, if you don't know him, he's part of the group that founded Vitamin Water and all that. He made a ton of money off that, a couple of bills. Mm. Darren Revelle had the first reports of this. But adding Rapoli to a group with A-Rod, J-Lo, you could see that they're trying to find people that's got some money and also have maybe an emotional connection. You know, A-Rod loved the Mets. He always talks about that. Yeah. J-Lo, a New Yorker. Rapoli now with the Queens background as well and some real money.
This has a lot to do about Jeter, though, too, for A-Rod. This has a lot to do with Jeter. That competition is going over and over. At least we know that if
I think, A-Rod... Don't you think it's also, though, that he also wants to have a different legacy in baseball than the one he currently has? He's really been trying to repair his image and his reputation in the sport.
Who can you compare him to? Who can you compare him to if he's able to come back and be able to have a big influence and turn the Mets around? Because we know he's a baseball savant. We know he knows his sport. We know that if he gets here, his first goal is to make sure that he's better than Jeter. But he would be inheriting a better team, a better roster, not a mess. So you talk about A-Rod being able to kind of go there and be like the president, CEO, whatever Jeter's equivalent is. You would have to give the edge and the nod to A-Rod.
I'm trying to, you know, like this, there's nothing to compare, because he at one time was the best player in the game. Like he was the highest paid player, the best player in the game. I mean, you know, obviously still trying to, he wants to stay connected to the sport. But this is getting real interesting, because, you know, it started with Steve Cohen, and that's a guy with real, real money. Like,
is
legit
he still,
money.
Has he just given up? Is he
pissed? No. I think, well, first of all, once he almost got the $2.6 billion deal done.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they started getting controls. Well, for 10 years, we're still going to be able to run baseball operations. And he's just like, that's not happening. So he walks away because he doesn't like the stipulations that I think the Wilpons were trying to include. So he walks away. I think that's a power move. So they're saying, oh, well, we have other people interested. Who are those other people? You got the Sixers and Devils owners. Mm-hmm. They want to get involved. And they're apparently trying to buy another team as well. So how many teams are they going to own? So you've got them. And now you have the A-Rod J-Lo group that you had Rapoli too. So I almost feel like for the Mets, and the value of that franchise, because of what's happening in our country, is going down.
Yeah.
So the original deal they might have gotten with Cohen, that might be gone now.
That's what I'm talking
about. And they've
got
to sell. Anybody that you read, anybody that's been covering this in the know, is making it clear that the Wilpons know they've got to sell. And they've got to sell pretty soon here. Like, they are starting to hemorrhage money, and they're in a place now where they don't really have the ability to run this franchise any longer. So they've got to do something. They got to get it done. I still, to me, if I'm making odds, I still put Cohen as the leader in the clubhouse.
I think he comes back like, you know what, here's 2-4. Because he's willing to pay two six for it.
Well, he wants to control. Else might be to come they still want to be involved. I think the bigger problem is not the money. I think for him, it's like, give me the franchise now. I want to take it over now.
Well, I think that's a deal breaker for anybody else that's trying to do it as well. I don't think anybody's going to allow, the Wilpons to run it as well. So I'm going to give you $2 billion, and I'm going to let you do what you want to do. So basically, I'm giving you money and letting you enjoy the money for 10 years and still run the program. No. It don't work that way. So I don't think anybody is going to be okay with that. Including J-Lo and Vitamin Man and all that good stuff.
Vitamin Man? Anyways, a little more baseball for you. I know I'm dragging my feet to Jamal, but I want to give you time on Jamal. Buster only just tweets a few minutes ago, we're down to the last hours before possible implementation of a short season by the MLB and Manfred. And behind the scenes, there are efforts being made to circumvent implementation. Last-minute attempt at haggling.
So basically, you're telling me there's a chance.
Yeah!
Well, there it is.
Did he really just say?
Major disappointment.
Don't add that. Yeah, you have right now what will be a 60-game season if they just, this is, you know, if you're 100%, you're getting 60 games. We still think the 64 to 66 is the most logical one. And what we thought they'd always hit. But we'll see now if maybe they're still trying to talk out something to not have that 60-game season. Is 4 or 6 more games going to make a difference? Who knows? But they're still working, and we'll see if we get an answer pretty soon.
Well, they don't want to invoke the doomsday one because they don't want them to opt out and then have to, you know, say,
correct,
hey, you take
well, they
that
want them to
away.
Promise they won't. I think that's the key there.
Pinky swear?
Yeah, exactly.
No trust.
All right, let's get to it. So this was caught on a cell phone video. This is in Dallas on Sunday. Jamal Adams in his SUV, and there's a fan who spots him, and this conversation from Jackson Velasquez and Jamal Adams happens. Listen.
Hey, what's up, bro? Hey, you coming to Dallas?
Hey, man, I'm trying, bro.
I'm trying. Now, that could just be him just trying to get out of the conversation. Yeah. You know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's just still a bad look.
And you got to know that the guy, you got to see the dude's phone is recording. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things as well, man. It's bad optics. And, you know,
he wasn't hiding the phone. He was holding the phone up. So.
Right. You can keep pushing, but you may not like what you get in return because the Jets could say, you know what? You want to be a jerk? Okay, we already have another safety. Like, we were going to get rid of Marcus May, but then maybe we're just stuck with Marcus May and the rookie, and we're okay with that. And we're gonna send you away, but it's not gonna be where you're gonna go away and have a great year. I'm gonna send you a place where you're gonna have a worse year than what we are anticipated to have. How about going to join your LSU alum, Burrow, and try and turn the Cincinnati Bungles around? Here you go. How about that? Let's go over there. You can have fun over there. And when it gets cold outside. It gets nice and cold outside. You have no indoor facility at all. So when it gets cold outside, you can come out here and you can enjoy the great downtown Cincinnati, Ohio. How about that? You know, so have a good time with that. And oh, by the way, yeah, you got to play that team. You know that team you wanted to go join? You know, the Baltimore Ravens? No, they can get beat the brakes off. You can chase Lamar Jackson around all day and take Mark Ingram coming down with no help. Good luck with that. You got Geno Atkins and nobody else. Have fun.
Yeah, I don't know if Cincinnati would want to make a deal like that for a guy that's already looking for money.
But they got 2 years. They got him for 2 years, and they can franchise tag him. So really, they can take him and hold him hostage for 3 years. Remember what they did to Chad Johnson? Chad Johnson was trying to get out of there because he was trying to get more money. They wouldn't let him out. They won't let you escape. That's like trying to escape Alcatraz. You got to be Sean Connery on the rock.
Like that's being petty. If you want to be petty, you can go ahead and try like a move like, or send him to like Detroit. You know, like you could do stuff like that if you want. But if you're Joe Douglas, I want to do the best thing I can for my franchise, right? I don't want to trade like Odell to Cleveland because I want to make him miserable and turn down better offers. I want to get the best I can. So if the best I can is still Dallas, what is Dallas? We talked about it on IG Live. What envision to me a trade that Dallas could make with you that you would say, okay, I'm listening to this.
Okay, so
even though he gets what he wants, you probably get more of what you want. What would it be?
I'm going to say if I want to give up Jamal Adams, a guy that I have for $3.5 million this year, have him under control next year, and could franchise tag him, essentially get 3 years more of his prime, and you want him because you got Super Bowl aspirations, it's going to start with me eating up your offensive line. You know, if we're starting there. If you're not giving me one of the offensive linemen, then we can't even have a conversation. So, you know, I'll take Lionel Collins for $300, and then you know what I'm saying. Hey, I really want a deep threat. And listen, I got some good receivers. You know, I got Perriman, I got mm-hmm. Mims, mm-hmm. but man, I want somebody that's proven. Like, I'll take Gallup. I'll take Gallup two for $300, Bob. So now I got another deep threat for Sam. This is all about making Sam happy, right? I got a deep threat for Sam, and I got protection for Sam because Lionel Collins goes to the right side. So now you may have two of the best tackles in the game.
And you got Becton.
If Becton can step up, and now it becomes an open competition for everybody that had hopes of playing tackle or playing. Now you're competing for three spots. You're competing for three spots, bro. So now you think about, you know, all the equity that they spent on the offensive, you know, offensive line in the offseason. Now you're telling somebody, hey, it's one less spot.
Why, if I'm Dallas, am I giving up? Am I taking from my strength, which is my offensive line, especially if I've got Dak on a franchise tag now? Like, why would I take away? And I have a chance to win my division, maybe even win a Super Bowl. Why am I taking away from my strength, an offensive lineman, to add a safety?
Because you're top heavy. You're extremely top heavy on the offensive side of the ball. Remember, they couldn't stop anybody. So that's the problem. You know, they couldn't stop anybody. They didn't have great safety play. That's why they went out and drafted one. But they definitely need to upgrade that position. And, like, really, Dak had a tremendous year last year. You talk about what his numbers were. He threw for almost, you know, he's top five quarterback. Right, so you know, you think about, you know, just another year, you know, and you got CeeDee Lamb. You would think that eventually, now Gallup, because I never want to disrespect a veteran, you know, with a rookie coming in that hasn't proven it. But you want to think that maybe CeeDee Lamb is an upgrade potentially. And you know that Cooper's there. You have Zeke. Now you need somebody to get you the ball back, because you can't stop anybody. You can't get the ball back. And they didn't have any impact players. Remember, they lost Byron Smith, so they don't have an elite corner. You know, so now you got to go out. Now you got to go out and try and get another elite player, and you need an elite secondary player, because if you can't stop anybody, it's great to have the pass rushers and Alden Smith. Maybe he can step up. You got tremendous linebackers. You know, I mean, and Vander Esch and Jalen Smith. But what are you doing on the back end? If they can just max protect and throw it over your head and eat you up, you need an impact secondary player, and that's what Jamal Adams is, and he's a tempo setter.
All right, and quickly, what is the reason why the Jets should even make it? They don't have to do anything. Do you feel like we're not going to see Jamal in green? Well, like, do you feel like it's definitely over? Like, he's not going to play this year for the Jets?
That's not the case. I think that he'll play. He'll be a professional. But he's going to be a distraction the whole year. He's going to be the squeaky wheel the whole year. Then you got him for another year. And then you might say, hey, do you really want to pay this guy if he's going to pout for 2 years, essentially? Because remember, he got sensitive and got tight last year.
Oh, yeah.
When it was around the trade.
When they took trade offers.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you can move him and you're getting equal value. Value, and you're maybe getting draft picks. Like I said, the move for me is Johnny and Dakwe, because you get him, you pay him immediately. You cut Brian Winters, and now you just created enough money to pay him, and now you can build around. That's a corner piece, right? And I know people, you know, Jamal, that's a corner piece too, but it is so much harder to find an elite pass rusher than it is to find elite safeties. It's just a position, right? Just like it's harder to find an elite, it's harder to find an elite quarterback than it is to find an elite receiver. You know, so like, okay, when you got one, you got to get it.
Well, that's what we got to see, is how this ends. But I mean, Jamal's making it pretty clear that he's not interested in staying. He wants out. Dallas is his preferred place. And all I'm going to say is this, is that for Jamal, look, he wants to go, whatever it is, he's unhappy. But when you're an athlete, there is a legacy. There is something to be said about that and how people remember you. And this is just, you want to go out, fine. just be careful with all the things you're saying, because it's getting caught on camera, and this is how you're going to be remembered. You might not care, but it will matter later in your career. I'll tell you what, on the ESPYs, which of course had to be handled a much different way than we're used to.
It was nice, though.
I thought it was really cool. And the one story that just really got my attention was the Jimmy V Award for Perseverance.
Oh,
was
the kid.
Yeah, it's Aquarius Ware. They call him TQ. This story is, if you haven't seen it, I want you to Google it. The video is up on the.com. What a moving story. This boy at 4 years old, there was a house fire.
Yep.
And his brother the poor kid was burned all over his body.
He said he could see his brother's...
His brother said...
Skin was melting like
melting
plastic.
Off his body. Like his brother, the way his brother described what he saw. This kid, though, he survives this. How about the little sister who was hiding under the bed and they found her? She didn't make it. I mean, what devastating things that can happen to someone. And if you look at him, he's missing some fingers. His whole body. You know what? It's amazing. Right. The NFL just tweeted this story, and I'm going to retweet it right now.
Yes.
Just so you can see it. This story, it will move you. I'm retweeting it right now, so go ahead. NFL just tweeted as we're speaking. The story is incredible because this boy not only survived, but then the perseverance of him with skin grafts and everything. So obviously you look at him and you can see something terrible happened to him. He became a high school football player that went on. Now he's playing in the junior college and he's working on getting himself to a 4-year school with dreams of playing the NFL.
And to be able to give him the award, somebody who's missing a hand, who mother could relate to the fact of having a son with a deformity.
Yes.
And having to overcome odds. And, I mean, it's such a movie. I mean, I was like, I almost was to tears. Not because I felt sorry for this kid. It's because it was so inspirational.
Inspired.
It shows you what is possible. And that's what I love about sports. That's why it gets on my damn nerves when they say hurry up and shut up and dribble, or you shouldn't use your platform. Because the thing about sports, it is the fairest thing in life. Because guess what? You get what you put in it. It's the fairest thing. And listen, rent's due every day. And if you don't put in that rent, or you don't pay the price, you don't get it. It don't matter if you're black, white, purple, orange, yellow. If you don't go out there and bust your ass, if you're not committed to the process, if you don't love pain, the grind, the grit that you have to persevere, the pain, the soreness. I can remember my mother, me not being able to move, like putting peroxide on my body, man. Me telling myself, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get up for practice tomorrow. But when that alarm clock comes on, you roll over. And this young man has to deal with that, plus the fact that he's missing fingers, plus the fact that maybe he can't really extend his arm, plus the fact wherever he goes, he has to try and figure out how he's going to hold the bench bar to get stronger, faster, and all he does is just show up, man. I tell you, nothing like sports, because he said it. It's the only place where I felt like we were the same. It's the only place I showed up and people weren't looking at me. It was the only place where I got on there and I was just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Man, if that don't move you, you don't have a soul. I mean, the fact, and it shows you what is possible. That's why an athlete and the great athletes are able to tap into their potential to get as high as they can. The great ones do that. But then you don't have to be the best athlete to be able to get the most potential out of what your body has. And TQ, no matter if he goes to the league, no matter if he goes to a 4-year college, he's achieved about the maximum that he can get. And how many of us come close to 80% of our potential? How many of us come 50% of our potential? This kid has come closer to his potential, and some others, than any of us. So he's already a better player than half of us in the league, even if he makes it or not. Because if all things been equal, where would that kid be? Man, you got to love sports. And that's why it's athlete's responsibility.
The perseverance, it tells you everything. Just never quitting on yourself because of what happened in your life is just that is so. I always say this: sports is about inspiring people. That's why we cheer. That's why we pay tickets. That's why we go. That's why we buy your jerseys, because there's something about you or your team that inspired us, that made us now believe in you. And that's really, anytime you talk to an athlete and they do it, what do the fans want from us? Inspire people. That's what they want. Inspire by your effort, whatever it is, your resiliency. Be what we can't be, or be what we wish we could be, or be what we are in a different walk of life that we can relate to. Whatever it is, it's always about inspiration. This story, and again, I retweeted it. It is just an amazing story. So we recognize him. But right now, we recognize that we got to get to audio files.
The audio file.
No more an awkward transition than that one, Bart. But I do what I can.
Smooth.
Marcus Spears on Get Up. Very powerful, very strong message as we're seeing more and more people speaking up, speaking out, and speaking against racism. What we see in NASCAR, what we see in different walks of life. How we all collectively can agree that this stuff's got to stop. And if you are, as you said, Bart, you know, don't be on the wrong side of history. Marcus Spears says the same.
I think right now everybody is on, we kind of going with the roller coaster that is when things happen, we shoot up and get all super emotional about it. And, you know, this whole thing is created. I'm done reacting to foolishness. I'm done reacting to fools. I'm done reacting to people that don't get it. Like, time is moving forward. They're getting left behind. Racist people are getting left behind. Does that mean it doesn't exist? No, it exists. We see it. We see it play out right with this situation right here. But I'm done coming on television talking about idiots that hide and are cowards and want to do these type of things in the dark. Because if you do things in the dark, obviously you know that they are wrong.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah. And just, you're going to get left behind. And I don't know, you have to talk about these things to expose it, but you also don't want to give these people any more attention than, I mean, you know that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, you don't give them a platform. I tell you what, like, you know, when they had that little montage that they had on ESPN, and they put it on the ESPN app, and they're talking about, you know, I'm a strong black man, and it started with that, and it started with other people talking. And I'm like, and you can just see the comments of idiots. And I almost went there. And I said, why give them the satisfaction?
Thank you.
Like who cares? Like,
all you're
at this
doing
point,
is emboldening
we're
us.
We're moving forward.
Right.
You can stay here and not evolve, and you can end up like a dinosaur, and you'll be extinct. So keep going, buddy. You can find yourself an island. We can find an island for all the bigots, all the races. You guys can have your own society. And then you won't have nobody to be mad at, because nobody's going to do the cheap labor that people have been doing for you. So go out there, pick your own tobacco. Go out there, pick your own strawberries. And go do all that other stuff. Do all your own yard work. Do all the other things, you know what I mean, that you guys complain about, you know, minorities taking your jobs. Man, you wouldn't do half the stuff that minorities do.
I saw somebody post once, it's like, go ahead, start your own country. Oh, wait, you tried that once and you didn't win.
Exactly.
Anyways, moving on to baseball. Oh, wait, no. Stay in the NFL. Stay with football here. Adam Schefter, this is last night on SVP, as the news of Dak Prescott planning to accept the exclusive franchise tag. Shefty's saying that now Dak has all the leverage.
The stakes on the poker game between the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott just got higher. Because once he does sign that, then the Dallas Cowboys owe him the $31.4 million for this season. And if they can't get a long-term deal done by July 15th and they have to franchise him again, guess what that number is going to be? 37.7. And if they can't get a deal done after that, it's 144% of the salary from the previous year. $54.4 million. So to me, when Dak Prescott signs, yes, he gives up his options for this year. Yes, he has to be there. But to me, he's got long-term leverage because the Dallas Cowboys can't afford to lose Dak Prescott. And they can't have him count against their cap at the numbers he's currently slated to make each of the next couple of years.
It's the point you made earlier, Bart. Betting on himself, but a lot of guaranteed money now just sitting there waiting for him.
Exactly, and that's what, you know, he has the leverage, because now they got to make sure that they get the deal done, because you don't want, what you would hate is for him to play under the $31 million this year, hard number, and then next year have to pay him, because you're like, man, you can't franchise him again, you don't have a better option, and then have to pay him, so then that's just like giving him a free year of money before his clock starts.
All right, Buster Olney, we read the tweet earlier saying that as we're down to the last hours before a possible implementation of a short season by Major League Baseball, as they still aren't to an agreement, believe it or not, through the weekend, He's reporting that behind the scenes, there's efforts being made to circumvent the idea of just implementing a season at 60 games. A last-minute attempt at haggling going on right now. Jeff Passan was on Get Up this morning, and he talked about how the players are going to react if the league does implement that set schedule.
In the absence of a negotiated agreement, Rob Manfred's going to set a schedule. Some people think it's going to be 54 games. Other think he might actually set it for 60. But it's not going to have expanded playoffs, and players are going to be angry. And so when it comes to wearing microphones during games, nope. When it comes to helping out and promoting the game, nope. When it comes to all these things that seemingly would make baseball a more popular or at least more enjoyable or certainly more accessible game going forward, the players are going to say no to that.
Bart, is this cutting off your nose to spite your face? Like, is this actually the worst response you could possibly have?
We are starting to share a damn brain. I don't want to tell them that because they say, oh, we only need one of you now, so it's all good. But, man, I was exactly saying that same thing. Because at the end of the day, yeah, you're trying to be spiteful to Major League Baseball. But guess what? Who you're really pissing off? The fans.
Yep.
So then what are you going to do when the fans just say, you know what? I'll just turn this off. I don't want to watch this crap. They don't want to give it. They don't want to let us in. They don't want to give us an access pass. I tell you what, you enjoy your little baseball game by yourself, and you guys be in the Dominican League next year because nobody be paying attention because they won't be able to afford to be able to pay you guys. And you go, like, no.
I'm about done.
It's like a little kid.
How stupid a response would it be? No, I'm not wearing a microphone. I'm not letting fans in. I'm not going to invite fans to enjoy our game.
The hell do we do?
I'm not going to help you grow our game. Well, guess what, dummy? You're going to lose money. And you're going to lose even more money. Like, you're going to kill your sport. Out of what? Because you're mad? Like, and that's how you do it? No. What you do is you grow the sport. Is you do all the right things. You get fans on your side. You get fans to say, these guys are the sport. They're the ones that need to be promoted, but the owners won't promote the players. So the players, you got to promote yourself. That's how you do it. What you do as players is you work with the networks. And you say, I'll do stuff for you. I ain't doing it for him. I'll do it for you, though.
Yeah.
Like, that's a much different story. But saying that, I'm not going to do this, being that spiteful, you're going to kill your sport. Like, it's just stupid, that response. But that has been this sport's problem for how many years now?
How many years has that been the problem there? It's coming from Tony Clark. That's leadership.
That is not leadership. That's the opposite of leadership.
Right. He should have them on the same page. Understand?
I mean, that's not. Let's go right into the iceberg, because you know, because the Titanic's strong enough to take anything.
Yeah, it can take anything.
Full steam ahead. Oh my God. You know, sometimes you wonder. Sometimes you feel like you deserve everything you get. This sport deserves everything you get. But I'll still be there front and center if they're playing and the Yankees have a chance to win. I promise you that. All right, last but not least, on the NBA side of things, as you can see, there continues to be record spikes in Florida when it comes to positive testing from COVID-19. More and more cases are popping up in Florida, which makes you now wonder, well, wait a minute. The NBA is supposed to be going there to play, and it's becoming a hotbed now. It's becoming the epicenter of the second wave, maybe. What is going on here? Should the NBA be worried about this? Are they deterred? Brian Windhorst on the Hoop Collective says this.
When I talk to people and I talk about the rates, I'm like, have you guys seen these rates in these positive rates in Orlando and Florida in general? And guys that I'm talking to are like, yes, we see them. But we're not going to be in Orlando. We're going to be in our bubble. And maybe that's naive, but maybe it's not.
I mean, absolutely.
They're going to be in a bubble.
Yeah, they're going to be in a bubble, and you know, we're going to have contact tracing. You look at what the New York teams are doing. They're saying, hey, man, our numbers are dropping. We're coming to phase two. So, you know, it's actually safer for people to be here than it is for people to be in Florida. So, I mean, who knows if the NBA maybe adopts that and understands. I mean, we were making fun of it before. Like, hey, Dolan, tell them to come here. You know what I mean? Who's it? Djokovic? Right. Mad because he got to stay in Long Island? You know what I'm saying? It should be plenty of hotel rooms here in New York. We're all good.
He doesn't want to stay in Flushing. I mean, it's not. We're joking. I mean, obviously, Queens has nice places, but still, it's not Manhattan. These guys are used to staying at
luxurious
hotels. And you always see during the U.S. Open, too, those cars. They're like SUVs that are shuttling all the people back and forth from Manhattan out to Queens. Like, no one, does anyone stay in a hotel in Queens? Is everybody staying Manhattan hotels? That's what it seems like. So, but anyways, for the NBA, I mean, you're going right into the heart of it right now. That bubble better, that better be a really good bubble.
Yeah.
Like that better be impenetrable. Because you've got some issues of it going on right now.
That better be a Wakanda, like, little invisible shit.
That's right, exactly what they need. I am, though. I'll say right here, I am officially concerned, though, about the NBA restarting in Orlando.
Because
we're that far away that they could have to all of a sudden change the plan.
Yeah, you hear the reports that LeBron is reportedly, secretly, they've been working out at some rich guy's house.
Have you heard this?
Squad. Yeah.
JJ, was it Redick actually revealed it because he knows the guy. He has apparently a Staples Center replica in his, don't say backyard. It's not a backyard. It's like,
yeah,
whatever
it's
you call
arena,
it.
It's an arena, yeah.
But it's
state,
in his house.
State,
it's like,
state.
But it's basically the court is a Staples Center replica down to the locker rooms and everything. And apparently the Lakers have been hanging out there and playing, trying to get a job. Like, the wonder why you haven't heard from LeBron.
He's got shin splints. He's in week two. Have you ever heard of somebody in week two of training camp? He's already there.
In a few minutes, the race at Talladega will begin, as they were supposed to race yesterday, as you know. And that, of course, was rained out. But as they're getting ready to line up, now Bubba Wallace is in the 24th position out of the 40 drivers, out of 40 cars that are in the race. But as they're setting up for the race, this is incredible. NASCAR just retweeted somebody. The 43 cars being moved up to the front, and all the drivers are walking with the car, like up the track. Like, as it's being brought out, it's just everybody walking. It's almost like a march.
It's powerful, man. The man.
That's
powerful.
A lot. I mean, that's some serious unity look right there. I mean, that's like we're talking about. You know, this is not like a 5 or 6 people. This is a large group walking up the track at Talladega behind the 43 car.
That's powerful. It should have been led with like Richard Petty. You know what I'm saying? Those are symbols of strength, of just togetherness, man. Like, that's the important part. You know, that's going to be encapsulated. That's going to be put in a time capsule, and people are going to see, like, the things that happen, the events that spark change. I mean, we'd be a little funny. We'd be serious all the time. But I'm saying he should start the race halfway around the track, and everybody got a chance to say y'all had a 400-year head start.
Oh, is that what we're doing?
You got to make fun of it, too, a little bit.
You know he would never. Well, I'll tell you what, though. What's a shame, of course, are some of the comments. You know, somebody's like, next you'll let him win.
Turn the mentions off, man.
Shut up. Like, give me. First of all, for those who don't know, Bubba Wallace was a runner-up for Rookie of the Year in his first year at NASCAR. He finished second at Daytona in his rookie season. He's had a couple of top five finishes, a bunch of top tens. You know, like, it's not like this guy's a scrub. All right, he's a young driver, so he's not going. He didn't come on the scene and just dominate. Very few do. Nobody's Joey Logano. All right, there's very few Joey Loganos that exist.
He's not the truck driver that said he quit NASCAR. Well, nobody even knew he was there. It's like, oh,
yeah, it's not that
you're
either.
You're a driver,
but you said this. Now you said this. Now this, we're going to go off the air, and this race is going to begin. Now NASCAR's tough. It's a good 4-hour commitment, right? You can check in, check out, but it's a long race. Are you going to keep an eye on this race? Is this something now all of a sudden you're engaged? You said earlier you're going to be engaged in NASCAR more. But I'm saying, like, today, especially after what happened yesterday, is this something that you might put on TV, keep it on, and just check in throughout the rest of your day?
Damn, Skippy. I'm looking for it right now so I can make sure that I also push the record button. Because now it's important for me to show my kids. You know, we watch NASCAR. You know what I mean? They don't know the hatred in NASCAR, the history of NASCAR. Now I can introduce it to them. Because now I can find them somebody that they can believe in. And I don't care about, you know, them believing in Bubba Wallace. They can believe in anybody. Because guess what? Not only is Bubba Wallace a hero, but those that stand behind him are heroes as well. Because if it was just Bubba Wallace, this wouldn't be having the impact. But the fact that the other guys are all on board behind him makes them heroes too. So we can be fans of everybody that's sitting back there supporting the car. So if you like the color of this car's son or the color of this car daughter, then it's fine. We'll support it. Pick somebody that you like. Let's find out who they are as a person, what type of driver they are, and let's get behind them. But one thing we can know, if you're stepping up, they might be good peoples. So it don't matter. Good peoples are good peoples. I don't care if you're black, white, or purple. But we'll be watching sport because they're trying to they're trying to include us. So let's include them into our television programming in our house.
I love that attitude. Right. I love that attitude. Let's respond to it. Vince Welch, a reporter for Fox Sports, does NASCAR, tweets a picture of Bubba by his car. Now, there's drivers all around and standing in solidarity, basically, behind him. And Bubba Wallace broke down into tears. That meant that much to him, that this is happening right now, you know?
Right. Like, put your ass together, Bubba. We got a race win.
Well, that's the next thing, is obviously to see a win. He's never had a win on the Cup Circuit. He hasn't won yet. Still, again, only in his third season. But it's so strange, Bart, right? Because as much as you would root for him to win, it also then would – it's just – I hate doing this, too.
Yeah, because
– But you have then those people that, oh, they wanted this to – they let him. Like,
well, who cares? Whatever.
Got to be something. Michael Kay joins us right now. And Michael, I mean, you know, none of us are going to claim to be diehard NASCAR fans, but as Bart said, he's going to be engaged in this race today. I know I will be. While you guys are doing the show, I imagine you'll keep an eye on it too.
Absolutely. It becomes a national story. So the fool racist that actually put that in the garage actually brings more attention to a sport and to a cause. So I just... I would assume that in any big time garage, they'd have to have video. They'd have to have a camera, security camera, so nobody messes with the car. I hope that person is found.
No question about it. So you have a big guest today.
Yeah, Peter's actually going to be on today.
He's finally working.
No, we have Dr. Anthony Fauci on at 5:30. So we'll ask him his take on. Now, I'm just going to ask him straight out. You know, if you were the king of the world, would you allow sports to be played right now?
Yeah,
especially
I want to know.
Florida.
I want to know if he got beef with Dr. Seals, man. What's up? We got doctor on doctor crime. What's going on? We want inclusion.
But it's always a good interview, so I'm looking forward to it.
But isn't that the biggest question, right? Of the spike going on now in Orlando, and the NBA is supposed to be going down there in a couple of weeks. Is this really the best thing?
You know what? I'm going to write that down, and that'll be the first one.
See.
Because you help me out. You don't help out Don. That's why I love you.
That is so, in a weird way, that's
hurtful. He's picked a side.
That is,
you know really, what? Good side really. To pick, Bart.
Well, you know what I do, too, as well. I turn all my TVs on the Michael Kay Show on the Yes Network. For me, it's channel 844 because I'm trying to give you double ratings. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, beautiful.
Look at the effort.
Why I love you.
Each one teach one. You know what I'm saying? You're my dog. Hold you down like four flats.
And you know what? I could give you two, like, cardboard placards that you could put up over Don and Peter's square. So you just got me.
Exactly. I could be singular focus.
That's right. And then Radio Shack has a filter where you only hear me on the radio. It's cool.
You even know this to me.
I'm going to send you some condiments, too.
All right. Have a great show, Michael. Have a great interview as well. We'll all be listening. Thanks
so much. All right,
guys.
Thank you.
All right. Dr. Fauci on the K-Show today. It's going to be really interesting to see the response that they get from him, obviously, about what's happening in a hot spot like Florida, where MLS and NBA were planning to restart their seasons. But also keep an eye on NASCAR today as well, 3 o'clock on Fox. Bart, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
I'll holla.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.